water. Here we go.
Andrew, got anybody? Who's sponsoring this? I'm working for free.
Bucky's
Auto Service Center, Tom. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Okay, let me test you. How many years they've been around?
13, and they have 48 stations.
Okay. Ah!
Oh, no, the other way around.
Okay, you know what?
Yeah.
We've cashed the check. They're a paying sponsor. They've been around for 48 years. They got 13 locations.
Yeah, okay.
That's where you take your car.
It.
You're not even getting half credit for that.
Yeah,
Bucky's
right.
Auto Service.
I don't get half
Center.
Pay.
I'm not making anything on Bucky's Auto Service Centers either. I'm not doing a spot for it. They buy the
All
top
right.
of the hour. Come on now.
Welcome, Bucky's.
Oh, now you're okay.
Yeah.
You're right with it. Oh, man, oh, man. Sorry I had to hear that on the air. We know you don't like when daddies fight. All right, here we go. By the way, one quick thing before we get into the news. Thank you, Tom, for your recommendation of Won't You Be My Neighbor. Saw it on Saturday.
Excellent, John.
Absolutely adored the movie, all about Fred Rogers. And you should have heard the crying in the theater.
Is that right?
It sounded like a TV convention. The number of people wheezing and coughing and blowing their noses. It was And then you always know it's an emotional movie. When the credits roll, nobody moves. You're like, I just want to see who the best boy was.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I just assume it's because to let people's tears dry before they have to walk out. Yes.
I don't know how long it's going to be around, but if he meant anything to you in your childhood, see it. Because what a pioneer. Yeah, good stuff. Anyway, there's the movie. There's my movie review on Tom's movie review. Uber wants to join Seattle's bike share battle. And apparently, when it comes to bike share, Seattle is setting a pace that hardly anybody can keep up with. It's a really interesting phenomenon occurring here in this city. This is Nathan Hambley from Uber. He says bikes have been very popular in other cities.
People are riding these bikes. People love these bikes. They're functioning very well. The complaint rate about these bikes is extremely low.
So therefore, Uber wants to get in.
Yeah, they want a piece of that action. Wired has a really, lengthy, like 15-page article about Seattle is like the center of the universe when it comes to bikes. We have like a quarter of all of these dockless bikes in the entire country, and yet there are some issues, and that is, as we've all known, there have been complaints that sometimes because they're dockless, they can be left in sidewalks, they can be blocking people's passageways, they can be considered unsightly by some, although I like them. I like them too, visually. They're
we agree
fun.
On nothing. I like the colors.
Yes, I think they're like little pieces of architecture on various corners. Now, I suppose if they're knocked over and blocking transgress over a sidewalk, maybe it'd be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, like a tent is not a problem.
Yes. Well, no, a tent.
Giant tents are not a problem.
In the sidewalk.
It's also kind of weird. I saw a bunch of them over near Fremont the other day, and they were all in a big pile, and I felt sorry for them.
Oh,
but then when they're all lined up nicely, I'm like, well, look at that.
Yeah.
They have them out front here. I kind of like people that are like, you know who hates them is Todd Herman.
Oh, yeah?
He thinks they're awful. He thinks they're garbage on the side. I mean, I think Rance might feel the same way.
Yeah, no, because they come with their philosophy first, I think.
Which is the philosophy.
They have a reason not to like it because it's new and it once had government connections. And I think they're just, but anyway, enough about them.
Yeah.
The idea is that
but they represent people that don't like
They can't
bikes.
Stand them, yes. And there is an active, I don't know if it's a majority, supposedly something like 75% of Seattleites or King Countyites like the idea of these kinds of bikes. But what's interesting about what Uber's doing, because Uber will be like the 800-pound gorilla if they move in. This will be an interesting battle. They are trying to get the city. Right now, they say, we're not going to invest until we find out what the city's rules are.
Mm-hmm.
And the city has until July. They gave them a 1 year. They gave these three other bike-sharing outfits a year to just do it however you want to do, and then we'll come up with some restrictions or regulations based on what we've discovered over a year's worth of practice. So Uber is waiting on that. But what Uber is trying to do is they want to prioritize e-bikes because they'll only have e-bikes. They won't have regular pedaled bikes. And they think that the bikes should be required to be locked to a physical object.
Yeah.
So in other words, some kind of docking station. And right now, they're in the they're basically lobbying, I think, the city council and the traffic commission to think of it that way, because they say if you do lock your bikes up, they don't self-lock like the other three do, then at least they'll be forced to be out of people's way, like on the sidewalks. So it'll be interesting to see how it breaks down. Right now, they do have bikes. They're called jump bikes, by the way, and they'll be red.
Okay.
So they'll add to this panorama of colors.
And lifesaver colors.
They're already in San Francisco, D.C., Sacramento, and Santa Cruz.
And is it better bike than, was it cheaper price? I mean, is it just a Me Too as far
it's
as...
It's more expensive than the non-e-bikes, but they say right now at least it's a little cheaper than the Lime e-bike, which I think might be the only operation that has a full
the price seems so small with, most people don't even, I think it's a dollar for an hour or a dollar a mile.
I think it's $2 for 30 minutes on Jump, which are e-bikes.
Okay.
Right. So, and then in terms of access, you don't need to have an app. You don't need to have internet connection, for instance, to get them. You can use Orca cards, but they do say you have to have an Orca card linked to a credit card and all this. So
right. There
are some kind of complications.
I think each bike that's on the road, if you look at it this way, that really bothers you, I think they pay, is it $20 per permit for bike? Something like that. There is a fee that the city assesses to the bike.
Okay.
So if you look at a bunch of bikes sitting there, say, well, add all that up, and that's money that the city takes in and then wastes on the homeless problem. So that make it feel a little better.
But anyway, by July, when this contract ends in July, they're hoping to have these new regulations.
Yes.
And they'll have a new onslaught.
Keeping with our theme of bike talk over the weekend, a number of people decided that they were so excited to be in a parade, they forgot to put their clothes on. This is a tradition that happens once a year at the Summer Solstice Parade in Fremont. You get people that are riding down the street in all nudity. And then the unfortunate part this year is they left some body paint on the seat. So that doesn't gross you out. I don't know what will. And the question is always, is it illegal to be nude in public?
Yes, because you get away with it. Is it just one day of the year it's okay, and that's the during the solstice parade? And it turns out, and by the way, people that were riding the bikes naked, and there were a number of them, a lot of them put protective plastic or something over the seats, but some didn't, and some leached
out. Well, I hope
out.
They catch something so they learn their lesson. I always think it's weird. It's like the woman with large pendulum breasts has just a piece of electrical tape over the areolas, and it's like, oh, she's not nude then. Then it's okay.
Yes.
Right?
Well, apparently she can take the electrician's tape off if she wants. It's not illegal to be naked in the city of Seattle, or is it the county?
State of Washington.
In the entire state. Okay.
Unless you're doing something.
That's right.
Lewd. You have to do something lewd.
According to Sean Wickham, he says, it's what you do with your nudity, as you put it.
Yes.
That gets you criminalized. But if you're just, I guess, just walking around, you know, naked, gardening or something, I think that must be okay.
Right.
Because you're not capitalizing on your nudity.
Okay. So I could,
for lewd purposes.
I could stand outside and be making, you know, grilling something.
That's right.
On a our Sabre grill. Maybe bacon. Anybody want another hot dog?
Just not yourself.
And I'm nude. And then it's okay. Then I'm all right?
Yes. You're, as long as you're not seen as flashy.
Okay, what if I were grilling and then I yelled out, hey, check out my ding-a-ling. Now.
Yeah.
Now, is that lewd?
I think that might be, because then you're drawing attention to the fact that you have a naked appendage that could be used for sexual purposes and might offend people.
Here's the way it goes to court. The person who called you in must testify against you, and the judge will ask you, the nude person, who is all nudity, will then say, do you realize that the act that you had been caught doing is considered lewd or obscene? And the person's like, I didn't think that was lewd. Then the judge
There's will a be- song about ding-a-lings.
Or just anything. Just
yes.
But it is an odd thing that if you're like... you know, Your Honor, the defendant was swinging sort of back and forth and exaggerated hip motion as he was walking. He knew what he was doing.
It's called the curly.
That is not fair. Well, anyway, there's no. Hey, check out my ding-a-ling. Okay, enough of that.
So anyway, we solved that.
Got done.
You can ride a bike naked anytime.
This entire section has become like a transportation section.
Yeah,
from 10
right.
to 10:20.
That's good.
So we'll break it up
producing.
With a quick story here. You ready? I challenged Tom the other day when there was a man, that homeless man, that attacked a tourist from Arizona. The tourist was there with his girlfriend. The guy came up behind him, punched him twice in the back of the head, took out a rope, had a 6-inch rope burn across his neck, tried to strangle him, and went back to his tent. Anyway, the police caught up with the guy. And I said, oh, homeless guy? 80% chance he is, according to King County in Seattle, he's most likely somebody from Seattle or from King County. He is most likely. And I said, well, so 80% chance, 20% chance he's not. I'll bet you $100, Tom, that he is from outside the state. And Tom, even though the numbers were certainly in your favor, according to Seattle Times, you decided not to take the bet. So then I threw it out to the general public. I don't know if they were nude at the time, but apparently that's not a big deal anymore. And I said, anybody out there want to take me up on the bet? So James West did. From the 253. And he said, okay, I'll take you up. I'll bet you $100. The guy was from Seattle, from King County. As it turns out, Mr. West owes me $100. The guy came here 9 months ago from Colorado. He was homeless in Colorado and came here. And he said he came here to spend time with either his grandson or his son. The story doesn't quite jive, but he had been previously arrested numerous times for assault, but he decided to come here to Seattle. So Mr. West owes me $100. He, by the way, Mr. West, is in the drywall business. It's a very difficult business. It's very hard for him. It's a lot of heavy lifting. There's mudding and taping. It is a dirty job. It's a tough job. But still, he wants to give me his $100 because he's a man of his word. He says, where would you like it to go? Do you want it to go to a charity? So where should I send it, Tom? Where should we have his $100 go?
If I were you, yeah. I would say you're a better man than I am because you've followed up on your bet. And so I think you should keep it in your pocket and take your family out for a nice dinner.
He said, I'm a man of my word. I want you to, I want to hand $100 to you or put it into charity, sir. If it helps to, if it helps, I agree with you the whole time on every show.
Yeah. So that, was that a sucker bet or not?
Oh, you know, no. And he's trying to get on my good side.
Yeah. There you go. By the way,
yes.
That 80%, we need to clarify what that 80% number is.
Oh, okay.
Now, I think that under all rubrics, you would have won the debate. But 80% was the number of people who lost their job, had a job here, and then lost it while they were here that became,
right.
became homeless. It's only 53%. Of the people, according to this survey, that were from King County,
right.
You know, for at least, although 53% is for at least 10 years.
So yeah.
That's a long time. You could have been here for 8 years and wouldn't be in that 53.
That was 1,500 people that were surveyed that were getting help from King County. So, of course, you're going to say you're from King County and lie about it. If they can't verify, then they're simply just going to ask you where you're from.
Well,
so, no, yeah. 20%.
50% didn't.
Right. Well, then good for them.
So they didn't lie?
Right. I don't know if they lied or not. I just know this, that most of the homeless people are coming here from other states. And it's not because they had a job.
You don't know that.
Prove me wrong.
Well, I know.
So far, every time we find one of these stories, we'll find out where they were from.
Yes.
And where were they from?
Maybe it's because the 80% never do these kinds of things. That there are good homeless, local homeless people, and it's only the outsiders that cause the trouble.
That's right. So we should probably do something about that. So, Mr. West, thank you very much for being a man of your word. I'll tell you what you can do with $100. You can keep it, as Tom suggests, take the whole family out to Black Angus. Yourself a salad. Something else. Let's see. Bellevue envisions a fleet of driverless vans that will help commuters skirt congestion. The whole idea is just trying to move people more quickly through the streets of Bellevue so you can get over to Pottery Barn a little quicker. And parking's still free there in Bellevue, I think, after 5 o'clock. Congratulations, Bellevue, for seeing the future as driverless vans.
Well, they realize that it's not just Seattle that has clogged streets. It's also on the east side. And so what they want to do is this is just, again, a pilot project. They've done it. They just started it in Ann Arbor. They've got it in Las Vegas, and they want to jump in on it. It's now Inslee has made it, has declared that it's legal to have driverless vehicles on the road to test drive on Washington roads. And so Bellevue just thinks that they want to get in early, and we'll have to see. They're imagining shuttles. What they want to do is they don't want to have to own the shuttles. They want to be able to lease the shuttles. Uh-huh. So they're looking for autonomous vehicle makers to jump in. Each of them holds 11 passengers, has no driver, and they go around in a specific area.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that's what the latest is. They're going to be one of the first in the nation to get there. So they're going to apply for a federal grant, and we'll see how it goes. But they're about 5 years out, I guess.
If you're keeping track of who's winning the war on Mother Nature, a gigantic snake ate a woman who went out into the cornfield to check on her corn, and an anaconda, 23 feet long, ate her whole, Tom. And then they found the snake sitting off to the side, and it had a giant bulge in the middle of it. And then they said, hey, we haven't seen Dolores in a little while, and there's a snake with a bulge that looks like Dolores. They killed the snake and then cut the thing in half and found her still in there intact with clothes and everything else.
Yes. I mean, swallowed whole. Now, I can see that as being the sort of the culmination of a horror film. I think it gives us a little comfort to know that she was dead before she was consumed.
Right. It strangles you.
It bites you first. It sort of paralyzes you, and then you are squeezed to death, in effect. So it's not...
Use the term hugged, Tom, instead.
It's grisly.
Use the term hugged.
But then, consumed entirely. And they said that it was supposed to be... you would have to, like... The odds of that are like winning the lottery and being struck by lightning, and that was impossible. And yet, it's the second time in that area of islands that in the last 2 years.
Is that in Indonesia, I believe? I don't know if she could have fought back, like the woman from WFYFF, reporter Mandy Gettard, tells about Dee Dee Phillips, Tom, who came across a bobcat, a rabid bobcat. Not an ordinary one, but a rabid one.
By the time it got right here, it took a leap. And I went backwards.
Philip says it was fight or flight.
Honest to God, I mean, it was out to kill me. I wasn't going to die today. And that was what I was thinking.
During the attack, the animal, which later tested positive for rabies, bit and scratched Phillips at least 11 times from her legs to her face.
So I literally choked the bobcat to death. And then when it stopped moving, I screamed for my daughter-in-law to call 911 and get me help.
Does that sound like the woman who just choked a bobcat to death?
Oh, I know. I expected her voice to be lower.
Slow enough. I just had to be a little bit more excitement in it. That's all.
No.
So, bobcat came out and I choked it to death.
Well, the nice
help arrived.
Okay, we got more. Okay.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Back it up a little bit. Hang on. Right there. Here she is.
And then when it stopped moving, I screamed for my daughter-in-law to call 911.
What'd that sound like? Hey, call 911. Hey. Tiffany?
Want to come over for pie?
Tiffany, you call 911, I'll just choke the bobcat to death. Tiffany, don't make me yell.
Get me help.
When help arrived, Philip says the animal was already dead.
It was either me or the cat, and it was going to be the cat that day.
Some of the pictures of her wounds, too graphic to show. The feeling in some of her fingers hasn't come back.
Okay, so she might be medicated. Tom.
Oh, there you go.
All right,
yes.
There we go.
Okay.
Phillips out of the hospital, but still being treated. This, the last thing she expected.
No kidding.
Not really, though. No, she's in that area.
The last thing she expected. I got 7 more seconds. How could this be the last thing she expected?
It's still hard to believe. It's still really hard to believe.
But says her instinct to fight back may have saved her life.
May have. I would say yes, it did.
Gee whiz. All sorts of problems with that story. The good thing is that she's familiar enough with bobcats, that she says that she knew what they do. And so what they do is they go for your jugular.
Right.
And so she knew that if she just had to hold the cat away from her neck.
Yeah.
And then she slowly worked her hands up when she grabbed him because she realized that it was, you know, her neck or his neck.
Yeah.
And she just kept hung on until he finally collapsed.
But you imagine died. That it's his claws incredible. Are digging into you,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah,
he's swinging,
like,
right?
11 times she was slashed. So it's a powerful woman. That's amazing.
Why did you? I'm having her. She's yelling out to her daughter Tiffany.
Yeah,
what are you yelling about the pie for?
Well, it's just. In other words, you said that her. It was a very casual kind of. It'd be like,
oh, okay.
Hey, honey, come on over for some pie. It's no different than hey.
That is so derogatory towards Southern people. No wonder people dislike you. We'll be right back, Tom and Shirley.
But why not you?
Here we go. Write to us at MyNorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Be a part of the ever-growing Tom and Curly Show audience. One of you gets a chance to be letter of the day. Simply write something that stands out in Jacob's mind as worthy of being the final word of the show. You get letter of the day. Nothing else other than that, but that should be just enough for all of you. Write to us at MyNorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Mother's Day was first established, I think, in 1908 or something like that. There's a woman that was sitting in a church service as they were talking about, oh, Mother's Day, mother, mom. This woman had been raised by a single father, and she said, you know, dads deserve credit as well. So she started to go around and try to get a bunch of legislators on board. Nobody seemed to pick up the mantle of creating one day for a father. It wasn't until 1920s that retailers started to take a look at it. It wasn't until the 30s that they fully embraced the idea of Father's Day because they realized, hey, This gives us a chance to sell some ties or socks. And now, and then in 1972, as Richard Nixon said, you know what? Let's make an official holiday. We'll call it Father's Day. It's going to be on this day. It'll always be on this day coming up in June, that Sunday, right? That third Sunday of the month. And now $51 billion transfers from people's pockets to cashiers all across the United States as we buy Dad a gift he'll probably never use.
3 cheers for capitalism.
That's what pushed it. That terrible?
So we've got a couple of interesting articles that were kind of wading through. It's interesting how that one is from Time Magazine. It's a history of parents, and they say, you know, fathers weren't given the time of day. Nobody talked about what the value of fatherhood was back in the colonial days. Our founding fathers were anything but fathers in any kind of family traditional sense. Basically, you know, you're a good father if you imparted faith and, you know, knowledge to them. That was it. There were very few expectations. Most people worked on a farm, so the family worked together. You saw your dad all the time. He was working in the fields. You were probably working in the fields with him. Then the Industrial Revolution comes along, and the automobile, too, two things that forced dads out of the home, that you no longer were working where you owned property, and so you were no longer with the family, and so then your job became the breadwinner. You were outside the family, and you came back with, you know, the finances, but that was about it. There are a number of, again, we can't go through the entire history, but they said one of the interesting things is between 1800 and 1900, I think of this more as a 20th century phenomenon, but it was more of a 19th century phenomenon, the average number of children went from 6 to 3. And when you go from 6 to 3, you have more time to concentrate on your individual kids. And so the idea of being a father, bringing home the bacon, but also nurturing your children, they called it the new fatherhood, kind of had a resurgence in the early part of the 20th century. And that's sort of where we stand now in terms of how much expectation we have of fathers. Most people, they say, through most of the 20th century, look down on fathers who are willing to do child rearing as somehow not ambitious enough or not goal oriented enough. And so there was the prejudice against them. And they said that started breaking down during the women's liberation movement in the 70s, where they started saying, wait, with more women going into the workforce, why not dads, you know, too, sharing some of the child rearing? That's sort of where we stand right now. It's kind of a standoff.
I did a story at Evening Magazine about a guy who had 5 kids and he had never changed one diaper. So we spent 48 hours with him, where we took the wife and we sent her to Alderbrook. I think we sent her away to Alderbrook for the weekend. And we put cameras all around the house and watched the guy as he tried to then wrangle the kids and change diapers and feed them. And stuff. And then at the end, when she came home, we had the big dramatic, you know, moment where we were hoping he was going to say, wow, I'll tell you something. I don't know how you do it, right? And he said, you know what he says? Welcome back. Here are the kids. And we're like, hey, but do you have a better understanding of how hard it is to raise 5 kids? He goes, do you know how hard I work? He still wasn't willing. Yeah. And then we put him back into a block of ice and put him back in the 1940s. Yeah, he still wouldn't recognize how difficult the job was when he said the stress and strain that I deal with every single day, having to be the breadwinner, is unappreciated in this house. Yeah. Listen, I could eventually get down the diaper changing and all that other stuff, but I have much harder life than she has.
Well, okay, and the idea is, though, why couldn't she be allowed to have that harder life, too? The idea is, if now more and more women are working, you know, why not having the men do more and more of the child care? Because it turns out it's better for the kids, which dovetails nicely into this other article I don't even know where this is from, but it's this
Slate.
From Slate, okay. Yeah. Fatherhood makes men better at work and at home. And the thrust here is that I think most people would acknowledge that if your fathers are actively engaged with your kids, the kids are better off. I mean, you have a mother involved and a father involved, you're better off. So that, I think, is there's not much argument. But the thesis of this article is that fathers are better at work if they are engaged with their children, and especially that first year of a childhood, when you really establish an imprint, you know, on the child, that what you're doing is, this will have no effect on fathers if they're not actively engaged. But if they're seriously involved in the day-to-day work, and this is all the menial things, not the special things, but the menial things of day-to-day child care, that they will be better off at work because this is bizarre to me, but just like they say that there's a plasticity, which means kind of a flexibility that happens to women when they are pregnant and then give birth, that also happens to the man first year. And because of that, it actually affects your brain. They can show how your brain adapts, and that adaptation, that adaptivity makes you better at work to think out of the box, and they have these statistics that purportedly show that you are not only better if you're involved with your family at work, than you would be if you just focused all of your attention on work and ignored the children.
The best Father's Day story I ever heard, I read in this book. This guy tells a story about how his father was a very, very frugal man. He was a farmer, and he saved up all of his money to buy a nice car. Before that, he had a truck, an old broken-down truck. He saved up all of his money, bought this beautiful car, and the kid said, "Dad, can I please take the car down to the store?" Did I ever tell this story? The car down to the store. And the father says, "Yeah, sure." And with that, he gave him the keys. The kid said, "I got the car down the driveway, long, long, long old dirt road." And he goes to make this turn, and because the car's a little faster than the truck, he turns too much, presses the gas down, and ends up driving the car down into a lake or a pond that was on the property. And he jumps out of the car long enough to watch it slowly push in, because he didn't have the emergency brake on. That's how it ended up. So he says, I walk back up the long, mile-long dirt driveway, and I feel horrible. I don't know what to say to my father. The car has been ruined. I've been left there. And he walks into the house. He says, "My father is reading the newspaper, and I can't see his face. And I'm standing in the living room, and I start to try to say the words that, 'Dad, the emergency brake, I didn't leave it on,' and the car," and he starts to cry. He can barely get through it. And his father, he said, folded down the left side of the newspaper. He says, "All I could see was just his eyes." And the dad said, "Looks like you're going to have to take the truck." And with that, tossed him the keys to the truck and flipped the newspaper back up again. Okay. He said, "My father knew that I didn't do it intentionally. My dad knew how sorry I was, and he wasn't going to yell at me because already I was feeling the pain of this mistake and what I had done." But he says, the fact that my dad just said, "Well, looks like you're going to have to take the truck." And that was a great moment and a wonderful Father's Day story. Here comes Keith Urbantown with a song called Songs for Dad, right here on the Tom and Curly Show. Hit it, Keith. The more I can see how much you love my mother. Come on, Tom. Everybody,
I want to tell you the story. What happened when he crashed the truck?
Hey, that was a nice. We're hitting the end. I got Keith Urban coming in, and then what are you trying to do?
You dragged me in, John, just for that very moment. Puncture the balloon of sentimentality. Every day I see. A little more of my father in me.
All righty. Hannah Scott's supposed to come in here, but you know, according to her contract, Tom, she's not allowed to enter without her walk-on music. You know that, right?
A contract?
It's in her contract. It's a small rider, basically. It just says that I, Hannah Scott, will cover every single story from Seattle to Stanwood. And then whenever I will come on your show, I must be accompanied by my walk-on music. You know that, right? And as a man that always crosses every T and dots every T. Stalling just long enough
for you to find it.
Hey, Hannah Scott, how are you?
I'm good.
Your imaginary contract.
I love that Tom is like, Hannah doesn't have a contract.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
I do, as a matter of fact.
Yes, she does. Oh, because she's a woman? Is that what you're saying? Wow.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's terrible on your part, Tom. Hi, Hannah, how are you?
I'm great, how are you?
Good.
Reaching once again, John.
So you are the one here at Cairo that is spearheading or at least reporting on the ongoing progress of a memorial being created and then also funded in order to be able to mark the loss of an entire neighborhood near Oso.
Right. So this is about the 2014 Oso landslide. Our station as a whole is helping to the county and the families of people who died in that slide, as well as survivors, raise the money needed for this permanent memorial. Now, $6 million is needed to get this done and do a land blessing and break ground on this next March on the 5th anniversary of the slide. It's a lot of money. So wanted to detail a little bit about what's gone into this and what exactly this memorial will look like. So the families in Snohomish County worked with a Seattle-based company, MIG Portico, to come up with the concept for this memorial. Concept designer Alyssa Rupp says that the final product is a 3-acre memorial park that walks visitors through every aspect of what happened, all under the backdrop of the slide site. So that mountainside still missing a giant chunk that came crashing down on the Steelhead Drive neighborhood below.
You'll be able to take a path that brings you through the story itself, an idea about who the community was that was here, about the people who were lost, about the people who were rescued, and about the people who participated in that amazing and incredible time.
As you walk through, there are exhibits detailing all of those things, as well as the actual slide and the geology of it. There are large community gathering and remembrance areas for larger groups, and then a separate series of memorials for the 43 people lost in the slide that are pieces of curved steel that are 6 to 8 feet tall.
The size of the piece of steel depends on the number of people being acknowledged. There were family groups who perished together. There were individuals. There were people passing through that area. And there were people who were residents. And so the idea is that the survivors of those folks, the people who loved those people, can embellish or personalize that to some extent.
So the Memorial Park is a series of loops that includes a separate community gathering space that will, for instance, on the anniversary of the slide, let communities as a whole gather to reflect and remember, separate from those individual places where families might want to be on their own. But you could still go through and see all of that. There's also a separate boardwalk that will take you out to nature that is coming back now growing there that had been dead before at the time of the slide. So a lot of stuff going on there. You can find out how to help, by the way, by going to mynorthwest.com/helpOSO or just text OSO to 98973.
Thanks, Hannah.
You bet.